The next speaker will be George Vanko, who is the leader of the femtosecond spectroscopy and X-ray spectroscopy research group. George won many projects. The most valuable one was a starting grant from the European Research Council. And the title of the today's talk is the Spin State Studies with X-ray Emission spectroscopy from static to ultrafast.
Thank you. So, indeed, I used to also work at DSF as a postdoc, then as a beamline scientist. And actually, usually, my group is working with functional molecules. We try to develop them. Study the dynamics, develop better molecules, which do a better function. And for this, we have a poster, and you are welcome to visit us. In the first talk, and then before that, Edith introduced that we also have a special occasion of talking about DSF, because after decades of works at DSF, Hungary decided to suspend its membership. So I just decided that instead of the usual talks, which are covering our present work, I'd be rather focus on some milestones, which we did at the ESRF, or some landmarks, and on which we are building our science. So some of these results will be a bit old, but it will be fun, hopefully. I think I have a little bit too many slides, so in due time, you should remind me that I should go faster, and then maybe even faster. I'm sorry for that. I had some problems in the end with my slides. And that's it. So we are working with the transition metal-based molecules. For them, the spin state is it's a very important property. What is the most interesting feature for us is that with the modification of the of the ligand. So what is around the transition metal ion, we can tune its ligand in the property. Since typically these are open D-shell systems, we can switch their spin states, the number of electrons which are unpaired. And there we can talk about high spin systems and low spin systems. This is the 3D6 case here, or the D6 case, which is when the ligand spin is smaller, it's high spin. And this red circle with the electrons will signify this, and the blue will be the color code for the low spin, and you can also see the individual electrons in there. So why should we care about the spin state? Many of you heard of transition metal-based systems, from batteries to catalysts, enzymes, devices, hemoglobin, whatever, they are present everywhere. Why the spin state is relevant for that is because the properties, the chemical and physical properties are hugely different if they are in one of these states. So the bond lengths differ quite a bit. That changes ion size, density, magnetism, of course, is different. Transport is different. Reactivity is different. And more interestingly, in many cases, we can switch the systems between these states, and that makes as potential to create new devices, opening up many possibilities in information technology. And there are many implications from geophysics to solid state physics, molecular physics, which I will try to show you some examples. Here's a basic system, an iron two compound, which these are, this organic stuff is the ligands around the iron, and you see in the middle of the iron. And this shows such a transition. Actually, with temperature, if you heat it up, it goes from the low spin to high spin. You can deduct it from the magnetic moment, which you can measure in magnetization measurements. Often, you cannot do magnetization measurements for several reasons. Then you need some different techniques. And this is why we decided to use X-rays. So why? What can cause problems? Certain spectroscopy will not like if the surface of your sample is different. The majority of the sample can be different, so you can have a minor component or even a a dopant in a system where we want to tell the spin state. The matrix can be magnetic, which gives hard time to magnetization measurements. And you might want to enclose your samples to do some extreme conditions, high pressure, low temperature, high temperature studies, which is not easy to penetrate. So therefore you need something which is penetrating, element sensitive, local probe, as all these listed here. And even it's for us, it's important that it should be, we should be able to use it as an ultrafast probe. So this is why we started to use hard X-rays, and I will talk about how we use X-ray emissions for this. Other spectroscopies also work, but emission was very useful in that sense. X-ray fluorescence, you all know. Here are some fluorescence lines which people use for quantitative and qualitative determination of the elemental composition. and here are the iron K beta and K alpha lines, similar to what Sasha Chumakov showed you. We can study their fine structure with spectroscopy. He also told you about Bragg's law and how with monochromators we can resolve the fluorescence radiation. And here is what we get on this compound, which I showed previously when we measure it at low temperature and high temperature. This is the spectra which are resolved. They don't look very interesting or full of features. But what we can see is there is the K alpha lines which get broader. So they go down a little bit in intensity, but get a bit broader. Here you can see the different spectra that shows that the change is big, just it's not very conspicuous. On the K alpha, actually, we have an extra peak if we go to high spin with respect to the previous case. And over here, we also see in green the difference that is sort of relevant. So the issue is that why do we have these changes in X-ray emission? X-ray emission is in a way similar to photo emission. You have some hole in the final states, and final state interactions are important. Actually, if you have final states, a hole in the valence state in the final state, practically we get the same information as photo emission spectroscopy. If it's the hole is deeper, then what you get is like X-ray photo emission spectroscopy. The final state interaction, which is giving us information on the spin moment, is here. So we have a P core hole, and next to it there is an electron with a spin and unpaired spin. And this can couple to the majority spin of the 3D of the valence shell. It can be parallel, anti-parallel, and there's an exchange coupling. There will be a splitting, which is small in case of the K alpha, because these electrons are further off, but sort of big, like 15 eV in case of the 3P, the K beta, because the 3P and the 3B electrons are closely overlapping in space. And okay, we don't have two lines, but we have practically hundreds of lines because we have lots of interactions between the D electrons, and that splits up everything, which we can model with multiple theory. But when we just look at the line shapes, we have to look at the envelopes and the differences of the envelope, and that tells us the information. So it's not that easy to just see it as in many other spectroscopies, but in design shape differences, we get all the information. And we can model it not only with multipath calculations, which is a semi-empirical, but now we are getting there with ab initio. Here are two of my colleagues who can calculate such spectra. And we can see that these are multi-configuration calculations, and we get differences which are pretty similar to experimental differences. So let me show you another example, because I have solid-state physicist colleagues. This is not only for molecular systems. Cobaltates were very popular some time ago because they show magnetization transitions with temperature or pressure, metal insulator transitions. They can be superconducting. We have them in batteries. So in many, many cases, and charge states and spin states of the cobalt in these systems are very important. So at a point, we decided to study the base compound, the lanthanum cobalt oxide, and study it with X-ray emission spectroscopy and see some nice changes with temperature, which I'm showing here also with pressure. Another group studied then with the soft X-ray absorption, which you can only do in vacuum on freshly cleaved crystals with lots of hassle. And practically this we could do in principle in air if we could heat up the system that much in air. And what we see is the every spin which we deducted from these experiments are practically the same within their big aero bars. And so it works not only for molecular systems, but different sort of solids. Another milestone, which I want to show it to you, I mentioned geophysical implications. We all know that the inner core and the core of the Earth is very hot, and there is a heat transport to the surface, which causes earthquakes, volcanic activity, tectonic movements. Some of them we don't like that much. And to model this, this heat has to come through some oxides of the mantle. There's the lower mantle, which is about two-thirds of the volume of the Earth, and practically it's made up of two, three oxides, two iron-containing oxide and calcium silicate perovskite. And when we started this, people believed that the iron remains high spin all the these conditions, which you can find inside in the Earth. And that is, of course, if you do some dynamical modeling, it's a big issue because all the transport and absorption, as I told you, are very highly influenced by the spin state. So what you can do to get to those conditions, you can take two diamonds, put your sample in behind, put some pressure medium, this thing is in a gasket, you squeeze these diamonds together, and then you can go to high pressures. We did that. These diamonds are typically several millimeters in thickness, so you need something penetrating to deduct the spin state. So this is the advantage of, again, X-ray emission. And if you remember, going from high spin to low spin, this is again the 3D6 system, can be seen by this satellite intensity going down. And that is what we observed. Actually, at pressures which are not corresponding to not very, very high depths, it turned out that the system is transitioning to low spin. So the first experiments were only done with just pressure. Of course, down there, the temperatures are also higher. So in the next experiment, we managed to have lasers heating the samples through the transparent diamonds, and could get up to thousands of kelvins and to all geophysically important pressures. And with this, we could see how these two systems behave. Maybe it's better if I don't do this in this time. So we can see on the left-hand side with this perovskite, which is the most abundant, that we have actually steps. We have two iron sites, and these irons are converting to low spin stepwise. And first only one converts, then the second converts, and then we go to low spin before the core. The other one, which is less abundant, it has a very gradual transition, but it also converts to a low spin. And this was very important for these modeling and dynamical modeling studies, and it publishes well. So we can say that they were like landmarks. Now I come to the Huxley's effect, which Sasha mentioned, which I would put a different spin on it than what he said. We are back to this compound, which we showed, and if we study the spin state with the magnetization, and you see the magnetization, we go down with the temperature. First, we detect these line shapes with this little peak on the side, so it's high spin. And then at a point when the magnetization drops, it also goes to low spin. So this part is disappeared. And then to a surprise, when we went even more down in temperature, like to this happens at 168 Kelvin. When we went to 30 Kelvin, the system we found back almost to the red line, which is the high spin. So interestingly, it just jumped up again in magnetization, and that was the strange effect. If you did a very quick scan, a rapid scan at this temperature, then it turned out that the system is low spin. But if the exposure is a bit longer, then it goes to almost completely high spin. And then it's not a radiation damage or whatever, it's some nice physics. If we heat up the sample, we can see that this yellow line is going from the red to to the blue, and at 55 Kelvin, we are back to low spin. So it has a temperature dependence, and it just lives only in the low temperature range. And why is it? Because we deposit energy. These are the potential wells for the high spin and the low spin state. And with the X-rays at low temperature, we deposit energy on the system. Actually, it's not a molecular effect. So it goes and reaches, that's okay. It reaches many, many, many molecules, converts in the lattice many molecules to high spin. And these high spin molecules remain trapped over there because only the lowest vibrational level is. So the issue was we deposited lots of energy in the lattice, and that converted all the molecules to high spin, and it got trapped because the temperature is relatively low, and we need to heat it up. And if you heat it up, higher levels are populated, and then the tunneling becomes faster, and this this system just decays back to the low spin. So it's not that bad, especially if you know in which temperature range you are. If you are not at these temperatures where the low temperature tunneling is very slow, then you can be fine. Actually, on the other hand, at experiments where we didn't couldn't excite the sample with laser, we had experiments where we excited it with X-rays, and it worked perfectly. So this phenomenon also happens with light in this temperature region. So if you go below 50 Kelvin, actually with green light you can, or blue light, you can switch to high spin, and red light you can switch to low spin. So this is the basic of partly of what we are doing on with our molecules, because we want to study the mechanism, how we switch with light the systems back and forth, how we can, because this way we can do molecular devices, and we would like to shift this temperature range from the low temperature range to room temperatures, and then we can make nice devices. To study the details of the switching actually is very fast. So this is why we need the picosecond and femtosecond time resolution. And this is what we are doing in pump probe experiments when we have X-ray probes to again study the spin states. Those experiments look like this. Typically, we work in solutions with compounds which are thermally not switchable. So they are low spin even at room temperature in the solution. And we shine a laser pulse on them, excite them to a higher state. And then with some probes, also X-ray probes, we study them. And we study scattering, we study emission. And with emission, we can see spin state changes. From that, we can deduct populations. This also started at the megahertz regime, and at picosecond started at the same time at the APS and the ESRF in March 2011. I was at the APS at that time, but my colleagues were at the ESRF. We were in communication. I was at the APS because over there I had to build up a spectrometer. At the ESRF, Peter Gotzer had the beautiful spectrometer, so they could use that already. And what we are getting over there, this is 100 picosecond on such a similar compound. After the decay, we see the blue, which is the ground state, so the low spin state, and the red is the high spin state, and we see the same differences. So with the we reach in 100 picosecond the same spin state, and then with X-ray electron field lasers, we can have femtosecond time resolution. Here is one of our best experiments on a similar compound. Here we can see. You cannot really see the scale, but it's 50 femtosecond steps. We can see the emission differences. Down here, we see X-ray solution scattering, so solution diffraction experiment. From this, we can deduce the structure. From this, as I said, you can deduce the population. And this will be more easy to see what we are seeing here. So we excite the system from the ground state to metal ligand charge transfer state. The electron goes out to the ligands, then slowly comes back to some metal-centered higher states, and then goes to this quintet state, which then decays back even slower to the low spin state. And here we can see the initial dynamics. We can see the MLCT state in blue, the triplet states in green with some kink on it, and the red, which is the quintet, which is Paul Merkle's switch, is the on, is already reached in like 300 femtoseconds. So if you check electronic switching, it is really much, much faster. And we also see that the structure is also switches following the electronic changes. It even vibrates a bit, so we have a coherent vibrational wave packet which oscillates. At a first inner turning point, it even goes back to a point where we have an intersecting crossing between the quintet and the triplets. We can even see it in the populations, and this is what we are doing. My colleagues can also model this very nicely with dynamical simulation, so this we understand. I would just like to tell you two more things. Not only with the solution, not only we can see the structure of the molecule, we can also see what is happening in the solvent. And the solvent has a heat response. So you pump with your laser your molecule, it heats up the solvent around it, and you can deduce the temperature from this, 5 more minutes or 0 minutes or minus minutes, okay. So we can deduce the temperature from the scattering, which is nice. From that we can do colorimetry, and then we plan to do this because we can calculate these energy levels, but we don't have optical transitions. We have no means to measure whether these calculations are fine or not. For the excited states, we have some lifetime measurements which indicate that the barrier has increased, so probably this picture is right. Hopefully doing this colorimetry from scattering, we will be able, and there's an experiment scheduled at ID9 of the ESRF to check this. And the last thing I wanted to mention that bringing back synchrotron technology to the laboratory, we can also measure X-ray emission too. Here is a big set of iron compounds, and you can see that we have quite different signals. Here are the differences. There are many of them. So for simple, abundant, concentrated samples, we can also do it in the laboratory. And I was a bit fast, I know. If you want to learn more about X-ray science and at a better pace, even from better speakers, because we have an excellent speaker who I will not talk on this meeting. In 2 weeks, if you haven't signed up, you can come and join our X-ray school, where we will cover from spectroscopy through microscopy, and diffraction, of course, quite the basics of X-ray science, and actually the state of art done at X-ray field action lasers and synchrotrons. And I thank you for your attention. Sorry for talking a bit longer.
Thank you very much for your very interesting talk. If you have some questions.
I was interested in your scheme on this envious cell, diamond cell, high pressure. Did you consider also to make investigations by reaching this high pressure by a nanosecond laser pulse, shock wave, and then a time-dependent high temporal resolution measurement of the spin state?
Yeah, there are many people doing that. So I am not, but there are works like that. There is the high energy density instrument of the European Exafia, for example, which does studies like that. Also at the LCLS, I know, I think it was called MIT, the B-mine. So people are doing this. And also at synchrotrons, they used to do it at ID24. I don't know the actual state. For us, it was a beginning and establishing X-ray spectroscopy at high. So I was interested from the technical point of view. The geophysicists were interested for the geophysics part. My interest is sort of fulfilled, but there are such works. If you have some ideas, we can discuss them.
Thanks, Jerry. As concerning the Huxley's effect, you were always speaking about isolated molecules in solutions. Is that right? Yeah.
No, the Huxley's was in a solid.
Yeah. Well, so what happens in the solid? Because there you may have, of course, cooperative phenomena. Sure. yeah, this negative pressure and so on and so forth. Have you done such experiments too?
Yeah, I mean, cooperative phenomena you have from the beginning. Okay, there we are. Already, when you measure this curve and not an exponential, you have cooperative phenomena, right? But with the Huxist, I mentioned that this is not a molecular effect. So you not in the sense that, but what is in the least when you excite the same molecule and then you are switching that on and off. Over here, you are exciting your ion. You are creating a core hole. That electron goes around, does a lot of further small energy transitions, and that sort of thermalizes. And I try to emphasize that this is happening in the lattice. So later, when you probe it, then you see what happened in the lattice, and then this is also why it is sort of strong, not a small one. If you just do a quick scan, you don't see it. You have to expose it, sort of warm it up, your system with relaxes, bring the system somehow with relaxes. This is why optically I had arrows which connect the states, and then this is just a sort of a parabolic arrow. And that would symbolize that you are just depositing energy at lots of spaces, and then you are converting a lot of molecules at the same time to the high spin state. So it's not a molecular effect. I hope I answered your question.
Any other question? It's not. I would like to thank you again.
Thank you.
Yes. Just to add in the memory, it is very nice evening. And I would like to thank all the speakers of this session once more.